Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Simon Gosworth, and he'll be answering your most important questions on single-handed spey casting. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Simon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question, and we'll receive your question immediately and try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Simon Gosworth about single-handed spey casting. Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is also helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Simon, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Simon's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Simon's latest book, Single-Handed Spaycasting, courtesy of Stackpole Books. And if you'd like to find out more about Stackpole Books and the great books that they publish, go to www.stackpolebooks.com. That's stackpolebooks.com. So here's how you can win Simon's book. First, you must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question is going to be about something that Simon and I discuss during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. And if you get it right, you're the first one, then you'll win Simon's book. So pay attention and stick with us till the end. Tonight our guest is Simon Gosworth. Simon learned to fish at the age of 6 and took up fly fishing when aged 8 and was trained by his father, well-known fly fishing instructor and author John Gosworth. By the time he left school at 16 to teach fly fishing, Simon had become the British junior casting champion, repeating the feat the next year as well. In the following year, Simon broke 7 British casting records and won the adult casting championships 3 times in succession, representing England in 2 European and 1 world championship. With the collapse of the British casting authority and the tournament casting scene in the UK, Simon turned his hand to competitive fly fishing. Over the following years, Simon represented England in 3 home internationals against Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, 2 European championships, and 5 world championships, culminating in the prestige of becoming England team captain and manager for the 2003 World Championships in Spain. During his career, Simon has written numerous articles for the fishing press, including publishing 2 books on spey casting, presenting 5 instructional videos and DVDs, appeared on numerous television and radio shows demonstrating casting and fly fishing shows around the world, and is recognized as one of the leading authorities on fly casting and fly casting instruction. Simon's latest book, titled Single-Handed Spey Casting, has just been published by Stackpole Books. He is a master and THCI, two-handed casting instructor, certified instructor. Simon works for Rio Products in Idaho, where he designs and tests fly lines, as well as being the marketing manager for Rio. He conducts fly casting classes and seminars around the world. Well, Simon, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hello, Roger. That was quite an introduction. Took up half the show.
No, we got plenty of time yet.
That's good.
Well, if you hadn't done so much, you know, it would have been shorter. So,
Oh, thank you.
That's what you get for being an accomplished flycaster.
Oh, that's my penalty. Great.
Yeah, that's your penalty. Okay. Well, we got lots of questions came in tonight, Simon. A lot of good ones, I think. And people are interested in single-handed spay casting, so we're going to have to give them the best education we can here.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in. And first of all, let's just talk about what is spay casting, and then we can talk. Dale Bonnert in River Falls, Wisconsin, starts us out with that question. And let's just start with that to begin with, and then we'll sort out the single and double-handed.
That's a great question. I think it depends on what country you're from. Spay casting is a form of casting a fly. No more than that. It's a style of casting that does not have a back cast. So that most anglers who, for example, know a roll cast, well, that is one of the casts that are within the spay family.
Okay, and when we're talking about the difference between single-handed and double-handed, besides the obvious, are there differences?
There are. So, obviously, the two-handed stuff was the origination of spay casting back in the mid-1800s in Scotland, and really spay casting technique didn't evolve to the single-handed rod until pretty late on. Even when I was growing up and my dad was teaching, nobody really bothered about spay cast per se with a single-handed rod. Sure, everybody did roll casts, but not actual spay casts. So maybe 130 years later, it kind of started to evolve to single-handed rods. In terms of the difference of them, really, it's as simple as the fact there's two hands on the rod, and they've got a long stick and one hand on the rod and a shorter stick. No more difference than that.
Okay. Now, but that's from a casting perspective. What about a fishing perspective?
Well, you know, there's pros and cons of both of those, obviously. Otherwise, we'd all just have one outfit. The two-handed rod has predominant advantages in big rivers. You'll certainly cast a lot further with a two-handed rod. You'll be able to mend the fly and control the way the fly swings way, way better with a long two-handed rod. And for equivalent rod size, let's just take a number 9, for example, just for the sake of argument. For an equivalent rod size, there's a lot more power in a two-handed 9-weight rod than there is in a single-handed 9-weight rod. So they really are designed, well, for what they were designed to do, which was to land large salmon in Scotland and big, powerful rivers.
Okay, and when we're talking about the single-handed, and I assume we're going to get, you know, into more detail around this, but we're actually talking about adding some additional, I guess, tools, casts, to your standard casts that we'd normally think of, and as I understand it, to possibly get more places that we couldn't get with our standard casts. Is that correct?
I think that's a great summary. You know, fly fishing is made up of all types and personalities and different designs, how people achieve their success. Some people fly cast because it's just a simple way of getting a fly to a fish. Some people fly cast because fly casting, the art of casting is the skill itself and the satisfaction is in there. And spay casting is no different. You can start off with a humble roll cast, which most fly fishers have to know and learn at an early stage in their fly fishing career just to get a fly out when there's an obstacle behind. And you can rest on your laurels there, and in reality you can say, hey, I'm doing a spay cast, because it is, as I mentioned earlier, the founding member of the spay cast. You can add a couple of little tweaks here and a little flip there and come up with a single spay or a double spay, and that opens up a little bit more water, a little bit more of the areas that most people walk by because you can't access it. Or you can take it to the extreme where you learn what's called the Heineken cast, the kind of the more advanced stringing cast where you plug various pieces together and create a spay out of the bottom drawer, which incorporates 17 moves and doesn't catch you any more fish, but it's pretty satisfying to do. So it's, I guess it's just, you know, the different levels. I've taught many people who just want to fly cast for a reason that all they want to do is get the fly out to a fish because the river they fish is overhung with trees. And that's a real good baseline to start.
Okay.
And likewise, there's a number of people who just enjoy the style of casting, regardless of whether there's obstructions behind.
Chuck Cadman in Santa Rosa, California asks, you know, what are the advantages to single-handed spay? You just mentioned one potential advantage of accessing an overhang. Are there others that you can...
There are, actually. You know, the great, I think, not the hidden story, but the untold story in spay casting is that the true strength of a spay cast, a true spay cast rather than just a roll cast, which is complicated if you can't see my hand actions here, but a roll cast is a non-directional change cast. If you take that cast out of the equation, the true strength of spay casting is the rapid speed that you can, and efficiency that you can change direction. Far, far, far quicker than any overhead cast ever will.
Okay.
As well as the obstructions behind.
Yeah, and that's where the roll cast is because you're trying to avoid having to do a back cast, but it still gets enough power to get out to fish in a large river, correct?
Yes, it can, and again, you know, an improved technique will cast further, and adding turbos and holes and things, you can make roll casts some prodigious distances, actually, with even just a regular 5 or 6 weight trout rod. So there's always steps in learning, and on the road to mastery of anything, there's always steps, and a roll cast with a 9'5" weight, I would say a good roll cast for even an average fly fisherman is probably 28 to 35 feet, not much more than that. It's a pretty good roll cast because it's a very inefficient cast in its own right. Mm-hmm. And then somebody who knows what they're doing could probably roll cast, and I mean a true roll cast rather than spay cast, maybe 55 to 60 feet. I think anything more than that is pretty tough to do with a 9'5" weight and a true roll cast.
And then when we take that to a spay cast, then what kind of further...
Then it doubles. I mean, it's when you have a good spay cast and you put a hole into it, which is what's called the turbo, a 9'5" weight, you could certainly throw a whole double taper line, 90 feet plus the 10 feet.
Wow.
You could easily cast a... I wouldn't say easily. I'm using that term very lightly, of course. It's possible to fish at 100 feet from your foot to the fly with a 5-weight, 9-foot rod 5-weight if your skill is right.
Same rod, same line, just different technique.
Yep, just improved technique.
Well, we'll want to talk more about equipment. There were a lot of questions about equipment, but I wanted to Doug McLean up in Calgary, Alberta, on the Bow River.
I just came back from there.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, I was there yesterday, came back yesterday.
Oh, did you talk to Doug up there?
I don't know. I talked to a few people. I taught a class up there and bumped into a few anglers, but I don't remember that.
Yeah, he does some guiding up there and so forth. He asked, do you see applications for spay casting, whether single-handed or double-handed, in tropical fly fishing?
Oh, well, that's an excellent question. Of course, I absolutely do. And, you know, it's not so much because of the obstruction thing. If you can picture the spay cast and draw a line right down the center of the page, and on one side of the line, you put the heading, obstructions behind. And on the other side of the line, you put change of direction. Then most of the stuff that I've fished saltwater for and used spay cast is directional changes. Particularly, for example, bone fishing in a flats boat. Making a shot, changing your mind, aiming for a different fish, or the fish changes direction, and you have to make a second cast real quick. There is, as I mentioned earlier, there's absolutely nothing faster than, for example, a snake roll for direction changing. And I will constantly use spay cast, snake rolls and single spays, fishing for bones or permit or anything like that that requires a directional change of cast.
One thing that always comes to mind when you start talking about, you know, saltwater fishing is, he said tropical because that could be freshwater as well, but thinking of the salt is wind. Does a spay cast help with penetration of wind any more so than other casts?
No. Okay. It doesn't. It's it would if you had a two-handed rod and you had the length of 14 foot driving down a line that's 350 grains heavier than the equivalent 9-weight that you'd use on a single-handed rod. Yes, that would. But if you took a like outfit, a 9-foot 9-weight or 8-weight, and an overhead cast against spay, the overhead cast has a lot more power forward than a spay cast because your back cast has the entire mass of the fly line loading the rod.
Okay.
And a spay cast has a percentage, 50% or 70% loading. So you get a lot less load and therefore a lot less penetration into a wind.
Okay. So let's talk about equipment here now, because a lot of people are interested in that. Again, Doug McLean up in Calgary asks, is a single-handed spay casting suited to any particular type of single-handed rod? And if so, what kind of rod?
Not really, because It's another casting technique. When I teach and I get that question, whether it's a one-handed or two-handed rod, I try and find out whether the caster is naturally a fast, short stroke kind of guy, makes short, fast strokes, positive stops, nice little flick of the tip and the wrist, or if somebody is a slow, longer stroke and kind of a little more relaxed in the casting style and speed, and then recommend that they would stick with, in the case of the first gentleman, the fast action tip rod, and in the case of the second person, a medium flexing, slower action rod. So you can spay cast with all the actions. You can spay cast with pretty well any action, from flexing down in a court grip right through to the very, very fastest tip action rod. It's just what your style and your natural rhythm and tempo is all about.
Okay. So when we're talking about single-handed spay casting, one doesn't need to go out and necessarily purchase a specific kind of rod to do those casts, as you would think of as when you're talking about double-handed and you're talking about a 14-foot rod or so forth.
No. I mean, to be very simple about it, no. You can, as I say, you can spay cast with absolutely any rod that's out there. You can certainly make better spay casts or easier spay casts with longer rod. So I would steer away from the rod action and move towards more like rod length. There's no doubt that a 9'6" rod is going to throw better roll cast and spay cast than a 9-foot rod for the same casting style and so on and so forth, and a 10-foot rod even better. Mostly because the, as I say, real hard if you can't see my hands, but mostly it's because the rod height above the water surface when somebody's completed the backstroke, the D-loop comes from the rod tip, goes down to the water surface. And so the higher and taller and longer the rod is, the higher that rod tip position is, and therefore the bigger the D-loop. And absolutely the essence of mastering any form of the spay cast is that the big D-loop is much more efficient than the small D-loop.
Okay. So length is more important than it seems anything else to
the distance.
Getting more out of your cast.
Okay. The distance.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of single-handed, but there's actually a very vague formula in two-handed casting which could be extrapolated to single-handed in some way, and that is that you gain or lose about 10 foot of distance for every 1 foot of rod height you change.
Oh, wow.
So there's, you know, as a guideline, there will be something close to that in single-handed rods. Now, I know single-handed rods tend not to vary by 3 or 4 feet, as two-handed rods do, but just as a good guideline, that's a good starting point, certainly on the two-handed rod.
Well, Chuck in Santa Rosa, California, and Ted in Newington, Connecticut, both were asking about rod characteristics and action. And I know in your book you were talking about, I think you like I'll probably get this wrong one way or the other, 50-50 chance, a fast-action rod. Was that it?
Yes, dead right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my history, my background. Tournament casting days, yonks ago, with very, very stiff fast-action rods. I like a rod. I mean, I'll say that the one advantage with those very fast-action rods is that I like a rod, because I have control of my rod tip, I like a rod that moves and does exactly what I tell it to. If I move, it moves instantly. If I stop, it stops. And with softer rods, you move and they lag a bit and you stop and then they overswing a little bit. So I like that control of a really fast action rod, whether I'm fishing overhead or single-handed, two-handed or spay casting. But that's me. And there's a bazillion anglers out there who fish cane rods, glass rods, who fish slow, soft graphite rods because they've got a lovely, slow, easy casting stroke. I will be the first to admit that a fast action single-handed rod, you're going to break off very fine 6 and 7/8 leader tippets because there's no give in them. You're going to find that playing small trout, there's nothing there. The rod's just a stick that you have no sensitivity. But, at heart, I'm a caster more than I am a fisherman, which sounds really strange, but I absolutely love the cast. And so I choose my weapons to get the most satisfaction from my casting.
Well, I think we had a question from Roberto in Brazil, but I just want to recognize him for, connecting with us from Brazil, which is a long ways away. But he says he met you at the last Denver show in January 2010.
That's right. I remember.
Yeah, it looks like he's got a shop down there in Brazil, and he wanted to know what the main differences are. So I think you described that rather well, and personal preference kind of You know what it kind of reminds me of, Simon, is, you know, when you're almost steering a car. You get in a sports car and there's no, you know, like I guess it's called rack and pinion steering or whatever, where you just, any little move and the car moves, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you get into kind of maybe a, you know, non-sports car and you can turn it almost an eighth of a turn and not get any response. So, I mean, it kind of reminds me of a slow versus fast rod and just the touch and feel of what you like.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I might actually use that in a lot of my school analogy because people could equate to that one.
Yeah, because every car steers differently, and just like every rod, I think, feels
yeah, very much so, very much so.
In the hand. Well, time for us to take a break, but stick with us, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Simon about using a single-handed spey casting to catch more fish. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Simon Gosworth about single-handed spey casting. If you'd like to ask Simon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, before we talk more about equipment, Simon, tell us what's going on in your fly fishing world lately. I know you're working at Rio. You just finished the book. What else is going on with you?
Oh, it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Dream job, huh?
Well, it's not quite a dream job. I prefer the product testing part of my job to the emailed part of the job, I must admit that. At the moment, it's getting towards, believe it or not, we're in the 2011 season, so at the moment I'm doing the new Rio catalog and working on that and we just finished up all the new line designs for next year, so putting those through their paces and testing all the tapers and kind of a combination of that in my physical life at the moment and number of schools. That's what I was doing in Calgary last weekend. I was teaching a class up there for a fly shop and doing a little bit of night fishing, which was absolutely brilliant. Gosh, I hadn't night fished for 10 years since I left England when I would night fish for sea trout, and it was something very, very special up on the Bow River. I long to go back, and I'll be back, said Arnie.
Were rainbows up there? Is that what you're
saying? We did get some bows. We went out on Monday morning. We went out, left the house at 4 o'clock and did a kind of an early morning float because I had to get out and fly out. But we went down to the lower section of the Bow, quite a bit below Calgary, and that was all rainbows. But right in the center of the city itself and the night stuff was swinging, skated stoneflies and just having these big browns just hammering them.
Coming out from their lairs at night, huh?
Yeah, you're swinging them into the banks, you know, they're hitting, the natural stoneflies are coming out then, that's what they're looking for and feeding on, and so you're only fishing 15 or 20 foot of line around the rocks, just swinging it in, but what a blast that was. That was mega highlight of that for me.
Sounds like fun, like you said.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned testing the new lines and so forth. Just as a side note, are there new, because that's what we're going to go into next here, is talking about lines. Are there new spey lines coming out by Rio? Or
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what's new in the line world there, spey or otherwise.
Yeah, there's, you know, if we're talking about 2011, that's a little too far ahead to talk about those. Some of the lines we're tweaking. We have a few new spey lines and some new tips. We have a new saltwater line and a new bass line that's coming out for 2011. And I pretty well think that's a new series of line, kind of a mid-price series of lines coming out in, they're all going to be released in September at the IFTD show in Denver. And, it's a funny question because it's 2010 now, I'll still get phone calls and emails saying, what new lines you got out for this year? This time last year, they were new to me because, I finished the designs and now it's about a year old and I don't even think of those new lines, so. The 2010 lines are different from the 2011 new lines, obviously. And so a bit of spey. This year we concentrated on new trout lines. We had the Trout LT, which was a line that I'm particularly fond of and proud of as a taper. That's a trout line that really the main goal I had in that, when kind of drawing up the initial tapers, was the best single-handed spey casting line we could make. And so that's why it really got to my heart, that one. Mm. So that was new for this year, 2010.
So that's something you can get right now. So.
Yeah, that's something that's been out for a few months now.
Let's talk. There's a couple more questions here I want to hit on rods, and then let's dig into the lines. Larry Ward in California asked to use a switch rod or just a regular one-handed rod, and maybe you could define switch rod for us too.
Yeah, actually, you know, that's a really good question. There's a lot of people talk about the switch rod, and a lot of questions about what is a switch rod. Where, in essence, a switch rod is somewhere between 10 and 11 and a half foot long. A single-handed rod with a short extension underneath the reel seat that you can put two hands on. And it's called a switch rod because the idea is that you spey cast two-handed with it when necessary, and you switch to overhead casting single-handed rod if you're fishing a lake or the ocean and you need just some distance. So hence the term switch. You switch between one and two-handed, between overhead and spey casting. So that's kind of where the origination of that is. And most switch rods are in the 5 to 8 weight range, so quite a bit lighter than the majority of spey rods, which are in the 7 to 9 or 10 weight range. I have both. I mean, I fish all three, spey, switch, and single-handed. I've got switch rods for trout, 5-weight switch rods, little 11-foot things, which I really, really enjoy spey casting with and swinging with soft tackles or with streamers in the fall for trout. They kind of have the advantage of a two-handed rod in that they're longer, so you get tremendous control when you're mending, or you have a great drift if you're fishing nymphs and indicators with that extra length. And so there's pluses to the switch rods. I fish those. I have to say that my heart, my soul of spey casting is all single-handed turbo spey stuff, all holes and spey cast that just fish with a regular single 9-foot 5-weight rod, but so versatile compared to the two-handed rods that's what appeals to my casting side. Is I can do 108 different spey casts with a single-handed rod, and with a two-handed rod you can do maybe 12,
wow,
13 at the most.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize that difference.
Yeah, big difference.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the caster side of me just giggles playing around with all these options that I have with a single-handed rod.
Great, great. Rod up in British Columbia asks, he says, I'm a very tall guy, 6'5", and would like to know what would be a good length rod for me to start my spey casting. Does it make any difference how tall you are as to what length rod you have?
No. He's a lucky guy because, you know, he's going to cast, with a two-handed rod, automatically he's going to cast 10 foot further than the 5 foot 5-inch guy next to him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
he'll do well. But in terms of physical performance, the river size and the fish size really are what influences the final choice. If I'm fishing Willow Creek, for example, just up here in the back of the town, that thing's about 25 foot wide, and so I fish my little 6 foot 6 inch rod, and I'll spey cast right through the valley because it's big waterfalls and a canyon that you're fishing through and lots of high banks. So it's pretty well all spey casting, and then I'll go down to the Madison and fish my 11 foot 5 inch switch rod because it's a big river and I need the height to cover, not so much the distance, but all the seams and riffles and boulders I need to mend and control my fly. So I don't think your physical height has anything to do with the choice as much to the river location and size and the obstacles you have to surmount.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got now several questions. I'm going to kind of merge some of these together on the fly lines. But basically, Dick in Illinois, David in Georgia, Al up in Vancouver are all asking about fly lines. What type of fly lines? Are the best to use weight forward or double taper? Or, like you said, maybe you can talk a little bit about the line specifically made for this.
Meaty question. I could talk about this the entire show. I have a massive passion for fly lines and casting, and to me, there's no doubt that the fly line is the key factor in the success of a cast, not so much the rod. And apologies to any rod manufacturers out there listening. They'll disagree, I'm sure. But yeah, first of all, it's about getting the right load for the rod. You've got to make sure the rod is going to flex with the line size on there. But in terms of spey casting, in terms of the tapers, that really is an interesting question. I'll approach that from the Rio side, if I may, because I just know, just because I know that better. For example, at Rio, we would have, in our premier trout line series, we would have 9 different lines that you would class as trout lines, all weight forwards. And you think, well, why not? You need 9 different tapers for trout fishing. Gosh, you know, gone are the days where it was just weight forwards and double tapers. But the industry has come in a kind of a evolved that the selling fly lines for trout fishing are weight forwards that have weight at the front end, kind of what's called a compound taper in fly line terms. Basically, it's not just a weight forward. It's a weight forward with a big bump at the front that gives you weight at the front, so it's really easy to cast. Loads of rod up at close range, means you can shoot line easy, that kind of stuff. And so if you were to look at our 9 trout lines, then 6 of them have got all this weight at the front end. 3 of them have the weight at the back end. And in terms of spey casting design, the best fly line design is line weight at the back, not at the front. And for a very simple reason, the D-loop, and hopefully people who are listening to this know what a D-loop is. A D-loop is what loads the rod. And the part that loads the rod is the part that's right at the rod tip, hanging down from the rod tip. And so that really needs to be the heaviest part, because you've got to get your load from somewhere, and what you don't want is the heavy part in front of you on the water. And so if you do get a weight forward line, then you kind of need to look at the profile, the shape of the line in illustrations, and whether it's a Rio line or Scientific Angler's line, or Cortland or Airflow, or whoever's line it is, you'll generally find in the catalogs, the websites, on the fly boxes, you'll find these illustrations of fly lines. And the very simplest design for the most efficient roll casting is going to have the weight at the back and longer tapers at the front. So that's where I'd kind of lean towards choosing a line, just to make it easy for yourself.
Now, why don't you describe the D-loop for people, because we've got some beginners here that may not know exactly what you're talking about. This will kind of set us up for talking about making the cast as well.
Well, the D-loop is, it's not, well, it is the back cast. It's the back cast that loads the rod, but because there's trees behind you, let's say just for a nice round number, you have 30 feet of fly line, and there's a bunch of trees behind you. Well, if you do an overhead cast, you need minimum 40 feet of space, 30 feet of line plus 9 foot of leader and plus the rod tilted back and so on. So if you have not got that space and you kind of hang, you drag the rod back really slowly and just let the line hang vertically from the rod down to the water and then in front of you, that hanging bit is what's called the D-loop. And as you get better, you enlarge that hang so there's a little bit more weight to help you, because it's all about getting the rod to do the work, not yourself. So the D-loop is really just the line that hangs when your rod is in the back casting position, what's called the key position, and your rod's angled back to 1 o'clock, and the line hanging down from it. That's the start of what a D-loop is. And then as you get better, as I said, you get a bigger one, or you put in a bigger one.
So when you were just talking about the line weight at the tip of the rod, so you've got all the line that's out of the rod, and the D-loop is your lighter weight line, correct?
Yeah. The D-loop should be the heavy line. If you had that 30 feet example out, mm-hmm. and you were to draw the perfect spey casting, roll casting shape of line, the first, say, 6 feet of the 30 foot, and when I say the first, the back end first, rather than the front end first, let's kind of start backwards. So the back end of that 30 feet, the first, say, 6-7 feet, would be the thickest part.
Right.
And then the next part from there, from 6 or 7 feet to the front 6 or 8 feet, is going to be kind of a middle tapered down, thinner section. And then the front 8 feet or so will be the very, very thinnest part.
Right.
That's a perfect, perfect type of line for spey roll casting.
So then the line that's at your tip is what drives the rest of it out because of the weight.
Yes. It's what flexes the rod, and then you don't do all the work. The rod does the work.
Okay. We've got some questions about Skagit style lines.
Can you talk about that? That's a common pronunciation. It's actually pronounced Skagit rather than
Skagit. Git. Okay.
It's spelled Git, but it's Skagit. Named after a river in Washington, a very famous Steelhead River. And the peculiar thing about the Skagit style of casting and the Skagit lines is that the Skagit River is predominantly a back-end river. It's going to fish best in November, December, January, February, in the coldest months. You fish very, very fast-sinking tips to get down because it's so cold and the river's a big river. And you fish very large, heavy flies because the fish are so lethargic in that cold water, they need something big just to wake them up. So what has evolved is this style of fly line that makes casting heavy sink tips and heavy flies easy. And that's kind of I wouldn't say it's the opposite of what I've just described as the best spey casting line, but when I mentioned the best spey casting line has that back end is the 6 foot fat and the front 6 feet is the thinnest, well, the problem with that thin is the thin has no lifting power, has no mass. And so if you put a fast-sinking tip on the front of that or a big, heavy, lead-eyed conehead muddler or something, the thin tips would not pick them up. And so there was this gap in fly line design, really, for a requirement for a fly line that would lift mass. And that's what a Skagit line is. Basically, it's just a fat washing line. Very few tapers at the front end, with a tip diameter substantially greater than the tip diameter of a regular spey line, and so that when you make your forward roll cast or forward spey cast, there's so much mass right at the front that it'll pick up the heaviest fly you put on, it'll pick up any sink tip you've got, it'll pick up some salmon that happens to be swimming by, you know, it kind of picks up anything on there. It's just a mass picker-upper.
So, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like the Skagit line may have, in style of fishing, may not have as much flexibility as the single-handed spey setup. Is that correct?
Well, in one way that's correct. What's cool about it, I guess as an instructor's point of view, I kind of take a slightly different approach, but what's cool about the Skagit, whether it's one or two-handed rod, is the thing is very short and very heavy and extraordinarily easy to cast. And that's the great appeal for a lot of people, particularly guides who, more steelhead fishing with two-handed rods, but particularly guides who know that the only really good way to fish this pool because of the trees is to make a spey cast. So they can hand a client a rod with a spey line and a heavy fly and see them absolutely fluff and struggle and create havoc and get nothing. Or they can hand them a rod loaded up with a Skagit line that, with 2 minutes of tuition, they can lop it out there 60 feet and they can fish the pool.
Mm.
Very, very easy style of casting.
Okay.
So advantage one is it's easy. Advantage two is the picks up mass. It's useless for presentation. It's never going to land nicely because of the tapers. It's never going to have a really good long flight time in the air because of the tapers. It's going to, a spey line design will cast further than the Skagit line design. So there's pros and cons of both, but certainly if there's anybody's going to be fishing, and I use them for one switch rods, one-hand rods, two-handed rods. If I'm fishing conehead muddlers, for example, swinging those in the fall, I'm going to put a Skagit line on. I just want the line to pick up the fly and not me find the thing falling in a mess in front of me.
Great, great. Good description and good separation, thanks. Need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about actually doing some casting here and the differences there. So hang in there with us, folks. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk-wade and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Simon Gosworth about single-handed spay casting. If you'd like to ask Simon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, anything else we need to know about line before we move on to casting here, Simon, that you would like to tell the folks? I know you said you could do a whole show, but...
Yeah, that's a dangerous question to ask me. As I say, it's not such a passion. I don't think there is much. I mean, I would like to kind of clear one thing up. I don't want people to think that the weight forward is, even with the weight in the back end, the best spay casting type of line. It might have been inferred by my description that double tapers have no place in the spay world when, au contraire, the double taper is king of the spay, I believe. And I want to clarify that point because it takes a certain skill level to appreciate the essence of a double taper, the advantage of a double taper. What I mean by that is if you have a standard weight forward, it's 100 foot long, and the average weight forward is going to have a fat section, you know, the head section of 40 feet, something like that. And then it's going to have 60 feet of thin running line for nice overhead casting distance. Well, if you make a spay cast and you get your 40 feet out, you can just spay cast happily away all day long, no problem at all. But if you make any distance casts and shoot, say, 30 feet of line, so you're fishing at 70 feet of range, the one problem with any weight forward is that you cannot make another spay cast right there and then. You have to strip all that 30 feet back before you can make the next spay cast. And the efficiency of fishing a pool, particularly when you're swinging, not so much when your fishing techniques require a strip, because in that case a weight forward is a far better product than a double taper line. But with a lot of the spay casting terms, because their technique is all about swinging the fly and direction changes, the most efficient way to fish a pool is you cast out 70 feet, as for an example. The line swings around slowly and ends up on the bank on the dangle directly downstream of you. And then you just cast again. You strip nothing in, you just cast again. And then you are doing one cast, one swing. One cast, one swing. And you work your way down through a pool like that. Where the weight forward, you make that cast, and once it's swung around, you waste, for the want of a better word, fishing time, stripping all that running line back in again. You then have to handle that 30 feet of line that's swirling around by your toes somehow before you make the next cast. So the double taper is absolutely the most efficient tool for that style of fishing, providing you can handle it. You can only cast 40 feet with your spay cast single-handed. There's no advantage to it. But if your ability is good enough to cast 60 or 70 or 80 feet, then every advantage is with a double taper line. And I'm a total, freely put my hand up and say, yeah, pick me. If anyone says, are you a double taper freak? Yes, I am. I fish double tapers, nothing but double tapers for all my fishing. So I'm kind of biased, slightly, subtly, heavily, something, towards a double taper. But that's my casting as much as anything else.
Okay. Now, for people that are just starting out that have never made a spay cast or whatever, what would you suggest? I mean, start with what they already have on their reel and work with that and then move, you know?
Yes and no. Yes, because 90% or 99% of people are going to have a weight forward, and that's definitely going to be an easier learning line. And no, because really, if they want to start and not find a struggle, they need to make sure that the weight forward has the weight at the back, as it kind of we talked about a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Whereas of the lines we sell, as I say, 6 out of 9 products that we sell have weight at the front. But in terms of percentage of lines sold, I would say 85% or 87% of the lines we sell, all the best-selling lines are the ones with the weight at the front because they're the easiest overhead casting line. Mm-hmm. So the chances are that most people will have a weight forward that has more weight at the front than the back of the head, and that is not a good roll casting or spay casting line.
Okay. So we can name names here since you work for Rio. But what line would you suggest then to start out with if a person was serious about this and says, well, I'm going to go get a new line and really want to do this right, what line would you get if it was a Rio line?
I would probably choose one of two lines. We have two lines. We have three lines that have weight at the back, but two lines are the very good roll casting lines. One is called a steelhead taper. It's a 6 weight up to a 10 weight. So if you're looking for a 5 weight or lighter, then you're out of luck on this one. The main difference or advantage of steelhead taper has it has a very aggressive front, what's called a bullet taper. So the steelhead taper is a very good line for spey casting big flies. Kind of a, not a, exactly a Skagit style line, but kind of a, as near a compromise as you can get with spey and Skagit. The Trout LT, which stands for light touch, that's the line I mentioned earlier. That one was designed specifically to be a roll casting, spey casting machine. It's tapering, it's grain weight distribution. It's not going to throw big flies well. It's not going to throw your conehead muddlers. It's not going to throw size 4 salmon fly waking patterns, but it'll throw your anything from your standard trout 8-10s up through 22s, 24s extraordinarily well. Very, very easy spey casting line. And there's a double taper version which has a very unique shape. We call it a javelin taper. It's a very unique double taper because I wanted the double taper to be, again, a very, very good roll casting double taper. So I would say probably start with a Trout LT just because it's the easiest one for the roll stroke spey casting, unless the requisite is throwing a bigger, heavier fly like skating a big bomber or fishing a conehead muddler, and that way the steelhead type of line is going to be a better option.
Okay, great, great. We got a couple of questions here now, moving into casting itself. Mike in Melbourne, Australia, and Gilsberg, I probably pronounced his name wrong, from South Africa. Both are talking about size of the river and can asking whether single-handed spey techniques can be used for small streams as well as large rivers. Can you kind of go into that a bit?
Oh, cool. Well, great. Well, hello, Australia and South Africa. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes, you do get very clientele, don't you?
Yeah. Tonight we do.
Yeah. Well, I would say that these guys are on the cusp of something extraordinarily exciting. I'm so passionate about small rod spey casting, probably because where I grew up in England, my main river that I fished was a largish river called the Torridge, which was a trout river, had sea trout in there, was a salmon river, it had the three main species you get in the UK of game fish. And then the one I loved the most was a little river called the Bray. And the Bray is a 25-foot wide little stream, the widest, sometimes 15 feet. Quite deep in places, you know, some of the pools were 18, 20 foot deep, big old holes, slate holes in there, heavily overlined with trees and high banks. And I learned all my spey casting, my original spey casting was always learned on these two rivers with a little 6 foot, 6 inch rod. It goes down to a 3 weight and a 2 weight. I fished a little river I mentioned earlier on, Willow Creek. I fished that with a 1 weight and a 0 weight. I mean, you can't go light and have a problem except the distance. You know, there's no way a triple aught, for example, is going to spey cast 75 feet because it's a triple aught. But if you're fishing a creek that's 15 feet wide and that's the right line for it, absolutely you can spey cast all this little light stuff and do extraordinarily well with it.
Great, great. So you just match the rod and the line to the size of the river and use the same techniques?
Yeah, yeah. It's harder because, you know, triple aught, taking the extreme, the lightest thing I think that's out there, that doesn't have a lot of D-loop weight, and the rod isn't the biggest, longest rod, so it's going to be harder to learn. If somebody was serious about learning it, I wouldn't start by learning with a rod that's that short and a line that's that light. But in terms of just answering the question of can you fish these little creeks with light outfits, then of course you can, absolutely. And then you can do it very, very well indeed.
I think you said this before, but let's just repeat it. If you were to start out with, for single-handed, what would be the weight and the length rod that you would suggest to learn with?
Well, you know, if it's a complete beginner of fly fishing, that's one thing. If it's somebody who's overhead cast and fished regular fly fishing methods and overhead styles for numerous years, then they have a bit more time and control. I would say that probably a good starting point in terms of purely the casting mastery would be probably a 10-foot rod for 5 weight. Medium action, bending in the middle section, not really fast in the tip, not too soft. and in many cases uplining it by one so that there's enough mass to load with a small D-loops that people learning tend to have. So I'd put on a 6-weight on the 5-weight rod, and if it was a 6-weight rod, I'd put a 7-weight rod on, a 7-weight line on, to get the D-loop to have enough mass to load these rods.
Okay. Carl in Washington asks, what are some of the basic casting fundamentals you like to see in a student before you have them take up single-handed spey casting?
Well, first of all, they have an appreciation of single malt. It's a
single
vital
malt?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
They have to have this appreciation, because that's such a Scottish Speyside heritage that if there's no appreciation,
well,
there's no hope.
I'm with you there.
Well, there you go, you see. Well, joking aside, I would say, I would answer that with two hats on. One hat being the instructor, and the instructor's hat would say, somebody who obviously just listens and analyzes their own cast. And I know when I teach people, I'll see them cast, and they'll make a mistake, and they'll cast, and they'll make a mistake, and they'll cast, and make the same mistake, and they'll keep doing it, and they're just... And all they start doing, and I'm sure I was the same when I was learning this stuff donkeys years ago, being typical men, we start to froth and snap the rod and slap the water and just curse the stupid outfit that you're using, instead of analyzing, well, quite why? How did that go wrong? So an analytical mind is cool. Certainly the quickest learning people I teach are always, sad to say, the young athletic types. They just have natural timing and natural ability. So that's where I'd be on the teaching side, although there's no age limit on this game. I've taught a gentleman who was 96 once. He came on a class and taught him spey casting, and he did very fine. So there's no age limit on it, just in terms of picking up on the quickest route, then young athletic studs are going to be the keys to do it. So that's where I'd kind of be on the, on the teaching side. And in terms of the taking my instructor's hat off and just looking at the spey casting side, I would just say somebody who's got good rhythm, and because spey casting is a rhythm. It's a very, kind of like all fly casting. Fly casting is a natural rhythm. And I would just say somebody who's got a sense of timing and a sense of consistency, then they'll pick this up quicker than somebody who's kind of just all over the place and has no inbuilt rhythm or timing.
Okay. Jeff from Boston, Massachusetts asks, can spey casting be practiced on grass, or do you need water tension to make it work?
Another great question. The simple answer is yes, you can practice on grass with the right outfit. There's no doubt that it is way easier on water, because you can use your 9-foot 5-weight rigged up with the correct spey line that you've chosen, Trout LT, whatever it is, and then you don't change your gear. But if you want to practice on grass, you make up this thing called a grass leader. And a grass leader is, for trout fishing, well, for trout rods, you'd make up a leader probably 10 to 12 foot in length, of about 22 to 23 thousandths diameter level, and it's a tedious leader to make up. You cut your leader sections and join them together with full blood knots, and the distance between each blood knot's no more than 6 inches. So you're on a 10-foot leader, if you have them every 6 inches, you're going to die. You have 20 sections, 19 knots. Lots and lots of knots. And when you cut the tags off the blood knot, you leave the tags sticking out like barbed wire. And those tags will grab the grass and provide some kind of grip to make the cast possible. So you could put a grass leader on, and you could have the possible practice. Unfortunately, it doesn't teach you right, because you can have the world's worst timing and the cast will still succeed on grass where it would fail with the same timing on water. So it's a hard way to master the correct timing, but it is one of the only ways you could actually practice on grass if that was your only opportunity.
Okay, okay. So it sounds like, and would you extend that to, is it easier to start just learning the casting part on a lake rather than a river?
Yes and no. I think that's probably the hardest question you've asked all night.
It wasn't meant to be.
I know. It sounds really easy, doesn't it? Probably it is on a lake, the very best way. The only reason I'm hesitant about that is because the spey family, in fact any cast, even if you look at an overhead cast, but essentially the spey family, they require a pretty straight line in front of you to start a good spey cast. A roll cast, no problem, you can do it with slack line, but a true spey cast needs a pretty dead straight, tight line in the water. And so the problem with a lake is that should you make a poor cast in somewhere in the day of casting and it lands in a wriggly heap in front of you, well, oh dear, you're screwed. What do you do? Because it's slack. Well, you pull in a few feet, you straighten the line that way, you make another cast, that lands in a pile of slack and there's no current to tighten it. Whereas in a river, if you're facing downstream and you do a poor cast, the current is going to just wash it straight and it's ready and straight for your next cast every single time.
Mm, very good. Very good. That makes sense to me. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the casts themselves and dig into that a bit more. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Simon Gosworth about single-handed spey casting. If you'd like to ask Simon a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Simon, we've got a question from Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas. He asks, what three spey casts should I learn and perfect for single-handed casting?
Oh, my gosh.
Because you did say there were, what, 168 of them or something?
108. Yeah,
108
that I know. That's a very baby step on a giant.
We beginners have to start somewhere, Simon.
Well, that's true. I'm going to kind of relate that to the same with a single malt question. It's like saying, which three single malts should I drink first?
All of them.
Yeah. Well, in terms of mastering it, then the roll cast is probably the fundamental. That's and I'm going to just keep throwing that in. Now, I know there's a bunch of people who hate the word roll cast lumped in with the spey family, but it is it's just the member, the founding member of this family, so it's there. So master a roll cast, get a good roll cast. In an ideal world, you get a good roll cast with your right hand, and then you master your roll cast with your left hand. You roll cast from both shoulders, because the wind is a critical factor in choice of cast. And the most important thing, I think, that the emphasis on the roll cast is to ensure that the line unrolls, the forward loop unrolls in the air and lands on the water at the same time as the leader. Most roll casts you see roll out in a giant loop that looks like some barrel of lard rolling down the river. And the last thing that lands is the leader and fly flutters down in a heap in front. That's kind of how I see most roll casts. So the first thing is develop a roll cast that's good and efficient. It has a very good forward loop that unrolls, and you develop it with right and left hand. Then, well, if you put the roll cast as one of the spays, then the easiest two to learn are what's called the double spay and what's called the snap T, or is also known as a circle spay, a Z spay, a snap Z, a circle something or other. It's got 5 or 6 or 8 or 52 names, I don't know, dozens of names for this one cast, but most people call it a snap T or circle spay. So that one and the double spay after the roll cast has been mastered. Those three would be the quickest way to be able to cast in pretty well any situation you come across.
Okay, now why don't you go into each one of those and tell us what those casts do? Well, I think we all kind of know where the roll cast is and
yeah,
the purpose
exactly.
There. But
we can ignore that one for the time being. The difference between, to take the roll cast out of the equation, we'll just simply say the roll cast is great for not changing direction.
Okay.
So the other two are direction-changing casts. The reason I would advocate learning both of the other castes is that here's where you need imagination. Anyone listening needs a good imagination. If you're a fisherman, you're bound to have a good imagination. If you're standing in a river and you're facing the middle of the river and the river is going from your left to your right, and that's called the right bank in traditional terms of spey casting circles, so you're on the right bank of the river. If you were to form a cast, the double spey that I mentioned to start off with, you would make that cast with your right hand. If you were to make the cast, the other cast I mentioned, the snap T, you would make that cast with your left hand. Now, the reason you need to know both is that, as I kind of mentioned briefly earlier, the wind is absolutely the critical factor on what cast is chosen. If, for example, I'm standing there, I'm doing my double spey, I'm on the right bank of the river, I'm making my cast with the right hand. And again, here's your imagination thing. And if the wind is blowing strongly straight up the river, because I'm casting right-handed and the wind is on my right, when I make my forward cast with my D-loop hanging by my shoulder, the wind is going to blow that into me every single time. And so it's vital for the caster's safety that they learn a cast with the left hand, which in this case is a snap T, so that if the wind is blowing on the right side, you just cast and make a left-handed cast and you're safe. And this is more so than overhead casting, because at least with overhead casting you can throw the line up in the air above you and behind you, whereas this one is hanging right next to your shoulder, so will constantly tangle you if you do the wrong cast with the wrong wind. And then the other side of the river, you change hands on the left side, where the river was going from right to left, you would do a left-handed double spey, and you would do a right-handed snap T, and the wind again would be the influencing factor of which one to choose. So with those two casts, and assuming that an angler does this graft and learns with their weaker hand, and actually that's not a graft. In my experience of teaching, nearly 70% of people learn spey cast techniques better with their weak hand than their strong hand.
Hmm.
It's all about muscle memory. It's because the average fly caster, I mean, when I kind of hang my head in sorrow is when somebody rings up to book a lesson. I say, oh, have you done this before? No. Oh, have you ever fly cast before? Yeah, 55 years of experience. Hmm. And you go, oh, no, because I know exactly what's going to happen. 55 years, their right hand, assuming they're right-handed, is accelerating in a lifting backstroke. And that is absolutely the killer of every spey cast. So a lot of people learn way better with their weak hand than their strong hand because there's no muscle memory.
Okay. So walk us through one of the casts as you would make it.
Okay. Imagination time again. River's going left to right. Okay, so the line, you make a cast, it swings across the river. The line ends up downstream on your right-hand side. And your target is right opposite you, 90 degrees direction change. The first thing with the double spey is that you are going to move the rod from your right shoulder high. It's going to start about sort of 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock if you look to the clock face. Well, probably 1 or 2 o'clock actually, because it's backwards clock face. But you start it high, pointing in the downstream towards the line, but high, raised up nearly 75 degrees. And the first stroke, what's called the setup stroke, is no more than the rod sweeping smoothly over the top of your head down to within a few inches of the water surface, pointing upstream. Can you picture that? So it's kind of a sweeping move. You can probably get your hand and you take your index finger and follow me, if you can see, as you start your rod at 70 degrees pointing to your right side, and in a vertical plane you come straight in a vertical plane over your head and bring your fingertip down so it points to your left side, almost to the water.
And this is in front of you.
And then the line lands in front of you, and the rod is on your left shoulder, pointing straight up the river.
Right. Okay.
So that's the setup stroke. And then, once you've got the setup stroke, you form the D-loop. And that is, for some unknown reason, called the D-loop stroke. You sweep your rod in a... not in a vertical plane this time, but in a kind of a fairly flat plane out towards the far bank, away from you, and then circling in towards your right ear and up to 1 o'clock, the key position. The movement of the second stroke, the D-loop stroke. And then the third stroke is just a regular forward stroke. You just do a nice forward stroke that hopefully you've already got. So it's called the double spay because there are two moves prior to the delivery of the cast.
Right, right, to get the change in direction.
Yeah.
But all the while, you've got line in the water, so your change of direction happens on the first move, come back around, put it out, but you've always got the tension on the water, whereas if you were doing this traditional cast, you'd be doing this all in the air, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, you would. It's numerous spay casts, 108 of them out there. So the double spay and the snap tee have one thing in common, and this is where, if you know a little bit about spay casting, this might make some sense, and if you're a beginner, this is probably where I lose you totally. But both of those casts within a group of spay casts that are called the waterborne anchor casts. What that means is the line stays on the water throughout the entire D-loop stroke. Not the setup stroke. That first stroke I described, the line comes out of the water and lifts and lands absolutely in front of your feet. Then it stays there for the entire D-loop stroke and half of the forward stroke until the line lifts out and creates a forward loop and goes. Those are the easiest ones to learn. The other group of spay casters are really tricky and impossible to describe, is that they're called airborne casts, airborne anchor casts, and the line is in the air, not behind you, very important because the instructions are behind you, but in the air throughout the entire D-loop stroke. And gravity will pull that line down to the water, and with these groups of casts, imperative thing is what I call the splash and go. It's that the forward stroke starts instantaneously when the first 1 inch of fly line touches the water. If you wait and you have 10 feet of fly line landing on the water, the thing will fail. This is on the back cast, the D-loop stroke. As I say, impossible to picture, awful description, but all of those 108 casts will be either airborne or waterborne on the D-loop stroke, and the waterborne ones traditionally and accurately the easiest ones to learn.
Okay. I know in your book you've got hundreds of pictures in here.
There's some good photos in there demonstrate and illustrate the difference between the two.
Yeah, and it's sounding to me too like a good instructor, it wouldn't hurt if you're trying to get there.
Yes, very true.
Very true. We've got a couple of other questions here, and we'll try to run through as many of these as we can in the next few minutes. Mitch in New Hampshire asks about, do you have any pearls for getting consistent anchor with a single spay, either one-handed or two-handed? I find it most difficult to cast, especially when utilizing different amounts of line during a fishing day.
He's
asking about the consistent anchor.
Yeah, well, good question, Mitch. Mitch obviously knows a bit about his spay casting. The single spay is the most difficult of all spay casts. So that's the first thing to understand. Until you get into the top, beyond the first 15 until the last 108. Of the basic spay casts, the single spay is the hardest. It is an airborne anchor style of cast. And so one of the hard parts is to get the timing right so that your cast works. It just doesn't wait too long, don't wait too little. To answer Mitch's question about getting a consistent anchor, I'm assuming that Mitch has got your timing right and that the point is getting the correct amount of anchor. And that's kind of hard. And it's particularly hard when you're learning when you use different lengths of line, as you mentioned in your question. Because with a given rod, let's just take two extremes. Let's say I had a 9'6" rod, or let's say a 10-foot rod, just for nice round numbers, mathematics. And if I had 30 feet of line outside the rod, only 30 feet, and my leader, my 9-foot leader. The anchor, the amount of line, what the anchor is how much line is touching the water when the forward stroke starts. So that's, for those who don't know what an anchor is, that's what it is. It's how much line is actually on the water when the forward stroke starts. So with that scenario, with 30 feet of line and a 9 or 10 foot leader, I wouldn't want a millimeter of fly line on the water. I would only want leader, just the leader. So I would make my timing so that there is just the leader touching, and I would go forward before a single piece of fly line landed. Now, when you go to a distance type of spay cast, let's say you've got a double taper on and you've got 80 feet of line plus a 10 foot leader, so we have 90 feet of line total. With that kind of amount of line, you need around about 10 feet of fly line plus the 10 foot of leader lying on the water. And so there is a ratio of how much line is outside the rod to how big the anchor is. The more line there is, the more grip or anchor is required. And so one of the problems Mitch might be having is that by playing around with different line lengths, he has different line anchor requirements, and therefore, wow, this is a lot of things I have to get right at the same time. The quickest way of learning this thing, and I reinforce this in all my classes I teach, is you practice with an absolutely set length of line constantly. And you'll get to a point where that is, you can do that with your eyes closed, you can get your anchor right, your timing right, time and time again, and then you try 5 foot more, and then 5 foot less, and you play around with that. But trying to learn initially on a single spay with different line lengths is a very, very tricky scenario. You just want to stick with one line length and make sure that above all, apart from that there would be two tips. One would be consistent line length. And the second thing, the one that probably most people fail down on, is start your rod in exactly the same spot in the air every time. When you do a lift, a single spay consists of, there's a little three-word saying for single spays. It goes very simply, point, lift, dip. And that's the three words you kind of repeat when you're making the backstroke of a single spay. You point your rod slightly across the river, you lift it up to about 10 or 11 o'clock, and then you draw a dip, a little kind of a smiley face shape with your rod tip till the rod's behind you in what's called the key position. And in some cases, what you'll find is that people might lift the rod tip 6 feet and then do the smiley dip. And the next cast, they might lift 10 feet and do a smiley dip. And the next cast, 3 feet and do a smiley dip. Too many vague variances there. Impossible to get it right that way. If you start with a set length of line, and you absolutely make sure that every time you make that initial lift, you lift to the same spot, then it becomes a lot easier to control the anchor position, because all you have left to change is how much power you make your back cast with. If you don't have that, you've got to change your height of your lift, and then you change your power as well, and you change a pile of things. It's just too many things to change at the same time of learning. So,
too many variables.
Too many variables. So stick with the same length of line and absolutely emphasize the same amount of lift every single time. Try the same angle change every time, always, I don't know, 45 degrees, or always 60 degrees, or always 20 degrees. Keep those the same. And then once you get the touch, oh, totally play around. Do anything you like. Try any length, any lift, anything you like, but not whilst you're learning it.
Run out of time here, Simon, but I want you to kind of maybe sum this up for those that want to learn single-handed spay casting. I know obviously your new book is an essential tool that would help a lot of people get going, but if I were to say to you today, Simon, I want to learn how to single spay cast, what would be the three steps you would recommend that for me to get started?
Watch something. This would be step one. Get an idea, whether it's YouTube and you watch, you literally look single-handed spay casting, whether it's a video that's out there, a DVD or video, and we have one at Reel that's mostly two-handed, but it's got a section of single-handed spay casting. If that's your particular fetish, then go with a single-handed chapter in that one. Get a lesson, watch a demonstration from one of the fly fishing shows. Get a lesson, of course, would be a good one. Probably the lowest on the level of learning is going to be reading my book, because it's very hard to see the movements in still photos. Movement is critical, especially with such a sophisticated cast as the spay cast. So a demonstration, a video, YouTube, an instructor showing you something. That would be step one. Watch it. Obviously, step two would be actually have a physical lesson with a good instructor who can explain things. And step three, above all, is the big old world, practice, practice, practice. So you can't be a master of this in 2 hours. It's going to take a long, long, long time.
It sounds like, hey, that's one thing nice about fly fishing is there's always seems to be something to learn, whether it's with new flies, new rods, new reels, new line, new casts. Always a lifelong learning experience.
It is lifelong learning, and yeah. With 108 different spay casts, there's a lot of life in that.
Trouble is if I learn one of those a year, I'm going to run out of time.
You know, once you learn the basics, the others you can pick up in days, minutes.
Good, good.
The basics are everything.
There's some encouragement there. That was good, Simon. That's a good place to end it. Well, listen, we will come back in a minute and give away a one-year membership for the Federation of Fly Fishers and also do that drawing for the Fly Fusion magazine. And, of course, give away Simon's book, Single-Handed Speedcasting, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So hang tight with us just a few more minutes, and we'll get that done and be right back. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to this region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org and learn more about what's happening in Alaska. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on this link and leave your comments. We truly appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings tonight are randomly selected from our show's database. So if you haven't registered yet, it's too late now, but make sure you do it for our next show and you may win one of these great prizes. So the first prize we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. Always a great gift to receive, and if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And our winner for that one-year membership is Steve Lane in Washington, So congratulations, Steve, on winning that one-year membership. I know you'll enjoy it. If you already have one, we'll get that extended for you. Now, our second drawing is for Fly Fusion Magazine, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which is out of Calgary, where you just came from, Simon, and a great magazine.
It is a good magazine.
Yeah, it is. And lots of great photography and lots of how-tos in that. And our winner there is Tony Lark in California. So congratulations, Tony. We'll get that set up for you. And now our final prize is Simon's book. So let me clear my cue here. To answer this question, you have to go to our homepage and type it in that text box. Be sure you put your name and your location in there as well. And the question I have, we've got lots more questions online. Sorry, folks, we didn't get to all your questions, but that's typical of the way things go, is more questions than time. If Simon were to pick a style of line for spay casting, for single spay casting, what style of line would he pick? So that's...
Ooh, that's a mean one.
We'll see what we get here. So I'm waiting for them to madly type in their answers here. And
It's a live thing, is it?
Yeah, it's live. I'm waiting.
Can I answer?
I got an answer here. The first one that came in, and the answer is a double taper line. Is that correct?
Oh, brilliant! Absolutely. That's why I thought it was mean. I thought it would go otherwise, but no.
Correct. No, see, I think you made that point really well. So great. Jim Jacobson in Fresno wins that.
Well done, Jim.
Yeah, so congratulations, Jim, on winning Simon's book. I'm sure you'll enjoy it and make good use of it. And lots of great rivers up in Northern California where you could go use that spay casting. So, well, Jim, you'll need to either in that same text box send me your address, phone number, email address, so that we can get this book sent to you from Stackpole. And congratulations again on that. We appreciate you listening and appreciate you playing. Well, Simon, I really appreciate you being on the show tonight, taking your time out of your busy schedule. And I know it took us a while to get you on because of that busy schedule, but we did it. And that's what's most important, and I surely enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Oh, me too. I'm sorry my answers were so long. We kind of cut out all the half the questions, 45, 90% of the questions. Because
I know, and there were more coming in online as we talked.
Oh, dear. Sorry, folks. So,
but one thing I know is that Simon is at almost every show that there is out there. And a good place to talk to him. And I know in a lot of the shows they are doing a lot of hands-on situations for spay casting where you can actually try it out in the pools and stuff. So
yeah, it's growing. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great way to get involved. Well, thanks, and maybe we can do it again sometime and go a bit deeper into this whole.
Oh, yeah, I like that kind of depth stuff.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Our next broadcast will be on August 4th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and in that show we'll be interviewing Trapper Bodanovic. And our topic for the show will be fly fishing the Missouri River. Trapper guided professionally in the Missouri River for 9 years and authored a book titled Fly Fishing Montana's Missouri River. So listen in and learn all you need to know about fly fishing one of America's great rivers. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Keeney's Fly Shop, Rogue Gorge Anglers, Power Fibers Online Magazine, for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.